Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. First leg round of 16 action continues this Wednesday evening in the UEFA Champions League, Europe's premier club football tournament. There are matches in Spain and Ukraine. In Ukraine, Shakhtar Donetsk is at home against the Italian club Roma. And in Spain, Sevilla will host Manchester United. At a pre-match news conference in Spain, Man U's Portuguese manager Jose Mourinho sized up their opponent this evening.
Sevilla defends really well. I don't think it's possible to score many goals. And I think the game is going to be really competitive because they can say what they want. They can be nice to us. They can say that we are favorites. That means absolutely nothing. I think I prefer to say that they have good players.
Jose Mourinho has won two UEFA Champions League trophies in 2004 when he guided the Portuguese club Porto, and in 2010 when he was in charge of the Italian side Inter Milan. At that same pre-match news conference in Spain, Mourinho talked about the significance of the round of 16.
I normally say that Champions League dreams, they start around the quarterfinals and not yet in the last 16. The last 16 still looks a long way to go. When a team reaches the quarterfinal, then I think is the moment where even the teams that are not favorites, which is our case, they start realizing that anything is possible.
In UEFA Champions League results Tuesday, Bayern Munich of Germany routed 10-man Besiktas of Turkey 5-0 to all but secure passage to the quarterfinals for a seventh consecutive season. Thomas Müller and Robert Lewandowski each scored two goals for the five-time European champions in Munich. In London, Argentine superstar Lionel Messi of Barcelona finally managed one of the few things he had yet to achieve in world football. In his ninth attempt, the five-time World Player of the Year finally scored against Chelsea to salvage a one-all draw. It halted Messi's longest goal drought against any opponent after 730 minutes. Messi's goal in the 75th minute equalized for Barca after Willian put Chelsea in front in the 62nd minute. At the post-match news conference in London, Chelsea's Italian manager Antonio Conte had this to say.
One mistake, but as you know very well, against this opponent, this type of player like Messi, Iniesta, Suarez, if you make a mistake, you pay, and it's a pity because I think that tonight, at the end of the game, we are disappointed for the final result.
For social media reaction to the final results from Tuesday's UEFA Champions League matches, we turn once again to my Voice of America colleague, Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Yes, Twitter followers posted plenty of video highlights from both those matches. One tweeter reacted to the Bayern-Besiktas game with this: "This was a hard game, and yes, Besiktas can't beat Bayern with 10 men. Not today, not tomorrow." And this one from a Bayern fan: "Lewandowski again. There's one thing that definitely won't come to Besiktas this season, the Champions League." Well, Leo Messi got plenty of attention for his game-tying goal against Chelsea. One tweeter mocked Chelsea, writing, "Weeks and weeks of preparation, and then Messi destroys it all." This tweeter writes, "The way Messi picks his moves is astonishing. His timing, movement, speed, and amount of touches on the ball, could even be one touch, to spark danger is incomparable to any player in the football world. Simply the most unique player ever in his own realm." And a little pushback on that last point in this tweet. Why do people act like Ronaldo isn't one of the best players ever to play football? Prime Ronaldo is just behind Prime Messi, not by much. Both unbelievable, and we'll never see two players with the same quality at the same time ever again. And this follower added his own layer of sarcasm. Messi finally scores against Chelsea after 9 matches. Biggest achievement. May have been a Chelsea fan there. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Sunny posted a photo by Reuters photographer Andrew Boyers that shows Barcelona star Leo Messi celebrating with teammate Andreas Iniesta after scoring his 75th-minute equalizer in London. Moving on to South Korea. The trio of women who make up the Nigerian bobsled team are Seuna Digon, the team captain and driver, and Ngozi Amuwere and Akuma Amioga, who trade places as breakwomen. Before now, most Nigerians didn't pay very much attention to the Winter Olympics and knew even less about bobsledding, which is a very westernized sport. The Summer Olympics, however, are a much bigger deal. Seuna Digon even represented Nigeria in the 2012 London Games in the 100-meter hurdles. Seuna says soon after that, while cheering for friends in the bobsledding event, she caught the Olympic fever again. She and her teammates set up a GoFundMe campaign, established the first ever bobsled and skeleton federation to raise awareness about the Winter Games, and the rest is literally history. One Twitter follower expressed his extreme admiration for the women's accomplishments, writing, "The ladies representing Nigeria in South Korea had to register the Bobsled and Skeleton Federation of Nigeria, then get someone to be president just so they could be properly registered. Wakanda is not fiction. These women are superheroes. They will never be forgotten." Nice wink to the East African nation featured in the blockbuster movie Black Panther. The Nigerian superhero bobsled team finished last in all 4 heats, but first in a lot of hearts. And I have to mention another first, the first ever women's Olympic bobsled team to represent Jamaica. They are team pilot Jasmine Fenlator-Victorian and breakwoman Carrie Russell. The dynamic duo finished 17th in their first heat, and tweeters from around the world reacted to their Olympic debut. Here's one. "Go get 'em. Prayers and best wishes to you all. I'll be hoisting a red stripe beer or 3 in your honor." And this one. "I am so excited to see the Jamaican bobsled team run. I may be American and cheering on Team USA, but I always cheer for Jamaica, especially bobsled. History in the making, girls. Kick butt." And finally this, "Totally stoked for you ladies on Team Jamaica. You so deserve to be flying your flag and sliding the curves in these Olympics. Making history for Jamaica. We love you here in England. Good luck." And Jasmine Fenlator-Victorian posted her own message on Twitter via Skype.
"By having more diversity in the Olympic Games presents the opportunity for people to see people like them doing something. You know, I grew up and all the Barbies were blonde and blue-eyed. I don't have blonde hair. I'm not blue-eyed. Create your own path. Create your own legacy. Create your own way. If a door is shut and you don't have a key, make a new door. Find a window. Get a ladder. Climb up. Figure it out."
Olympic athletes continuing to make history and inspire the world. I'll have more sporty news for you tomorrow. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Years ago, Toby Dawson won a bronze medal for the United States in the freestyle skiing moguls event at the Winter Olympics in Turin, Italy. Flash forward to the 2018 Winter Games in Pyeongchang, and the now 38-year-old Dawson coached the host South Korean team in the same event he competed in. It's being described as a remarkable homecoming for Dawson, who in 2007 met his biological father for the first time in Seoul, South Korea's capital. And here's how Toby begins his remarkable homecoming story.
The story goes, I was in open-air market with my mother, and she was out purchasing food for the family to fill the refrigerator. And she had turned around with her wallet to pay for some food or some produce that she had been buying at one of the booths. And I guess I just wandered off. And when she turned around to look for me, she couldn't find me, and she spent, you know, the next couple of hours looking around for me and was never successful in finding me. Later, I guess I was probably taken to a policeman or something, and then the policeman brought me to an orphanage, and I sat in an orphanage for about 4 or 5 months. And after that, I was adopted and ended up in Vail, Colorado by two ski instructors named Mike and Deborah Dawson.
Mike and Deborah Dawson taught Toby how to ski. In fact, his first taste of mountain slopes was whizzing down them in his adopted father's backpack. Toby says after he won the Olympic bronze medal in 2006, it created a media frenzy in South Korea.
Well, it's funny. I never was personally interested in meeting my biological parents, but my mom always wanted me to, and she thought that it would be such a wonderful thing for me to be able to meet my biological parents. And so she was always secretly rooting for me to make it to the Olympics because she thought that would be the platform for me to actually be reunited with my biological parents. And, you know, I guess that motherly intuition is correct. By going to the Olympics and receiving a medal, and then there was a big Korean buzz about it. And a lot of media came forward because I am full Korean in blood. They were very excited because they've never had like a medal in ski or snowboard history. So it was a big story here in Korea. And a lot of people started coming forward and saying that I was related or either they were my parents. And that's kind of how the whole thing got started.
A man from South Korea's southern city of Busan came forward and said he was Toby's biological father, and a DNA test confirmed his claim. In February 2007, the two had a very public reunion, a news conference attended by dozens of reporters and TV crews. Toby says their reunion was difficult for him, not joyful.
To be honest, it was hard. It was very surreal. It's hard to actually be emotional at that point because you know you're being under the microscope of so many people watching you at the same time. So I think that I was slightly emotional or emotionless at the moment. But after being able to, like, you know, kind of get comfortable with the situation and obviously looking at my dad for quite a bit of time, you know, realizing, you know, very similar facial structure and like the same kind of facial hair, which is not very common in Korea, I was like, wow, this is kind of like looking into a mirror when I'm much older.
Toby Dawson also met his biological mother a few years ago. He describes his relationship with his biological parents and his adoptive parents.
I have two amazing, wonderful parents in the United States, and that's more than enough for me. And this is kind of, you know, all the extra. So if the story doesn't fit together, it's not a big deal. I still have a decent relationship with both of them. I still communicate with them through text messaging and phone calls and things of that nature. And my full biological brother, I still keep in contact with him, and we talk and communicate pretty well. So I've just added to my family, really. It's nothing, no hard feelings or anything like that. I'm happy with the situation, and I don't hold anything against them.
Toby Dawson says he's grateful Mike and Deborah Dawson adopted him.
Man, I'm so lucky to grow up in the United States. What a wonderful place to grow up with such loving parents and to have all these amazing opportunities to be able to represent the United States as an Olympian, to be able to be a final presenter and help Korea win the bid for the Pyeongchang Olympics, to become a national team coach and walk in with all the Korean athletes and then also the North Korean athletes in the opening ceremonies and into coaching these athletes into the Olympic Games. I've had so many cool opportunities. I've had so many cool situations in my life because of being adopted.
That's 2006 Olympic bronze medalist Toby Dawson. Toby coached the South Korean mogul ski team at the Pyeongchang Olympics. And as Toby mentioned, he also helped South Korea win the 2018 Winter Olympics as a member of the country's bid team. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The VOA Swahili Service Chief, Mwamoyo Hoops Hamza, joins us once again on the show to talk NBA hoops with us. Sporty greetings, Mwamoyo.
Sporty greetings, Sonny.
Great to have you back in the studio.
Always a pleasure, you know that.
The 67th NBA All-Star Game, now history. Team LeBron edges Team Stephon 148-145 in Los Angeles, California. The game kind of showcases the league's best players, and it was played under a different format. Did you like the format, Mwamoyo?
I liked the format very much. I really, really enjoyed it because it made the game competitive. And as you just said, the score bears witness, 148-145.
Close game.
Very close game, LeBron's team winning. Do you remember the score in last year's All-Star game?
I have no idea.
It was 192, almost 200 points, to 182.
Unbelievable.
So what that tells you, it wasn't a basketball game. I mean, guys were just dunking and showing off, you know, walking up the court, walking down the court. It wasn't a very competitive game. And at that point, that's when you miss Kobe Bryant and years back, Michael Jordan. Because these guys, they took that game very, very seriously.
They did.
They were very competitive. Now the game, you know, was becoming a bore, you know, and with this new format, I think it made it more competitive, and the mixing of the players from the different conferences makes it very competitive. And from now on, we might be seeing very competitive All-Star games.
Well, I think you can say LeBron took the game pretty seriously. He won his third career All-Star Game MVP award. LeBron had 29 points, 10 rebounds, and he passed the ball for 8 assists. But maybe early in the game, did he set the tone with his defense?
Talk about the statistics first. Almost a triple-double, you know? And he came out very early on, setting up the tone, coming out aggressively, playing defense. Clearly, he led the way. And the rest of the players, you know, when they saw that, and the king, as we always say,
the king,
is doing that, everybody said, hey, game on, you know? So I think the way he came out, you know, set the tone and everybody followed, that's what made the game very competitive. And it was fun to watch, you know, beautiful, beautiful.
Well, last week, Mwamoyo, we talked about how LeBron now in charge of this new look Cleveland Cavaliers squad. And I guess some NBA fans are wondering, will it once again be Cavaliers-Warriors in the NBA Finals? I think that would be a fourth consecutive season if those two teams can make it to the NBA Finals. What are your thoughts at this point?
Now, Sonny, at the beginning of the season, everybody, it was a lock that, you know, Cleveland and Golden State Warriors are going to meet again in the finals. But then Cleveland started having trouble, and Boston came up very strongly in the beginning of the season. And for a while, Cleveland looked like they are, you know, not really up to game. They won't make it out of the Eastern Conference. But then come draft day on February 8th, you know, they overhauled the team. Now they're in contention. But at the same time, the whole basketball world, at least the reporters, people who cover basketball, now are talking about how vulnerable is Golden State Warriors. Because Golden State Warriors, they do look a little bit, either they're bored or they just, I think a lot, some people think their bench is not all that strong, so that makes them vulnerable. And some people think, you know, the players, they've been doing this for four seasons. So the focus that's required to play the game at the level they were playing for those four seasons can be very taxing to the body and mind. It could be that they're a little bit, you know, tired down. But then again, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the second half of the season. They might just, you know, kick it up and show it that they're really the defending champions. But there's one thing I think they have to be careful. In the NBA, once you lose the fear factor, other teams stop fearing you, you're in trouble. Because at some point, everybody is afraid of you. And for the last four seasons, everybody has been afraid of Golden State Warriors. But now there's somebody called James Harden and Chris Paul leading the Houston Rockets.
Houston Rockets. Right now, they have the best record in the NBA, Momoyo. Could they maybe lift that trophy? I think the last time they did it, Akeem the Dream Olajuwon was, you know, playing for them.
Was keeping it simple.
How do you like their chances?
I like their chances very much. And because their team is well set right now. They are playing very well. They have to, if they can keep this up, and if Golden State Warriors don't improve on their game, they don't, you know, pull themselves together with the bench and with their main players, there's a good chance that Houston Rockets could upset Golden State Warriors this year.
We've talked about LeBron James on previous shows, Momoyo. Rumors before the All-Star game that maybe LeBron will be packing his bags for Los Angeles. Some other players have been mentioned as heading west. Paul George, currently with the Oklahoma City Thunder. It makes me wonder, will they lose their legacy a little bit? Hypothetically, if LeBron was to join another team. I know he was in Miami for a few years. What do you think?
It'll be a big, big mistake for LeBron to leave Cleveland right now. You know how people hated him, you know, when he left for Miami. Now, he came back, he was a hero again. If he leaves now, I mean, his legacy will go all the way down there. Mm. I mean, for somebody like Paul George to go to L.A., that's fine. He's going home to L.A. Big lights, short time. But LeBron James has to stay with Cleveland if he wants his legacy to keep, you know, climbing.
And on that note, with this younger team around him, maybe that'll spur him to say, yeah, I need to stay here a few more years.
Absolutely, because now he has no reason. I mean, a few weeks ago when the team was going down and they had all these issues, you could say maybe he could have a very good reason to leave. But you're the team leader. You're the king. It's your court.
Well, we got about a minute left in the show, Momoyo, and on Thursday night, LeBron James and the Cavaliers will host my favorite team, the Washington Wizards. What do you think of the Wizards in this post-All-Star break point?
Sonny, I feel so sorry for you.
Oh, no!
Well, I mean, the Wizards have been very competitive even after losing John Wall. So, and they have always played well against Cleveland Cavaliers historically. Even, I mean, two seasons ago when they met in the playoffs, they were very good against Cleveland Cavaliers. So it's always a competitive game. So anything can happen. But, you know, still, next week I'll tell you, hey, Sonny, sorry.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that. Go Wizards, go Wizards. That's the VOA's Swahili Service Chief, Momoyo Hoops Hanza. And that wraps up the February 21st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Zubair. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Maritime security in Senegal got a boost this month with the addition of two patrol boats provided by the United States. In a ceremony at the Dakar Naval Base, U.S. Ambassador to Senegal, Tulanebo Mushingi, noted that the true prosperity of a maritime nation requires good maritime stewardship. The illicit trafficking of people and narcotics causes harm to our societies. Illegal fishing and the illicit traffic of goods and marine pollution are causing damage to our societies, said Ambassador Mushingi. Solutions to these ills cannot be implemented by a single government entity or even by a single country. Maritime insecurity in strategic places such as the Gulf of Guinea can affect us all. In addition, those engaged in illicit activities in the maritime field will use borders to avoid prosecution. For these reasons, we must work together in the maritime domain. We all benefit from efforts to help build the capabilities of our maritime partners. To assist Senegal in maritime protection, the United States turned over to Senegal's Marine Nationale two 38-foot Defiant-class metal shark patrol boats. The vessels delivered this month are the fourth and fifth patrol boats turned over to the Senegalese Navy as part of a six-vessel package valued at $5 million. Through annual exercises and training engagements, Senegal and the United States continue to strengthen each other's maritime forces, the ambassador noted. Through a sustained commitment to the annual Africa Maritime Law Enforcement Program engagement, Operation Junction Rain, Senegal stands out in its capability to counter maritime threats such as illegal fishing, illicit trafficking, and piracy, and as a regional leader in training neighboring partners in these capabilities. As we have seen with recent maritime activities with Senegal's neighbors, Marine Nationale professionals have a challenging and dangerous job, said Ambassador Mushingi, but they can do it well day in and day out, always on watch to protect Senegal and its regional partners. The United States, he said, looks forward to continued engagement with our maritime partner, the Marine Nationale.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, South Africa has a new president, Cyril Ramaphosa. He ascended to the top position after the ruling African National Congress ordered the embattled, scandal-plagued Jacob Zuma to step down as president. We will discuss the implications of the ANC's power shift on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day.
Some things change, some remain the same.
From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.